Well, good evening, everybody. Welcome to this Monroe City Council meeting for December 11th, 2012. I'd like to call the meeting to order and ask if Edie, you would take roll call, please.
Councilperson Gary.
Here.
Cutterback.
Here.
Williams.
Here.
Camp.
Present.
Davis.
Present.
Gamble.
Here.
Hanford.
Here.
Please join me for the pledge of allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Before we get started tonight, I would like to make the following recommendation to council. After council's action last week in conferring with city attorney, it would be my recommendation that we pull final action number CPA 2013B, school mitigation fees, second and final readings, both A and B. And move them to comp plan discussion in 2013 if council so desire. The second portion of that, I believe, is unnecessary given that there is no change recommended to the amount of discount provided to the school district as a pass-through. So based on last week, city attorney's recommendation, that's my recommendation that we table the discussion or pull the discussion and bring it back to council if so desired as part of the 2013 comprehensive plan discussion. Do we need a motion? Okay. So that item is pulled. No action.
Both A and B, right? So we're
both
just two
screwed.
Great, thanks.
Okay. With that said, we'll move to the first Councilor Pettibat.
Oh, I'm sorry. Could I just ask a question about that? Just a clarifying question. Last week, I think there was a motion for a first reading of the ordinance to approve taking out a comp plan, so we're just not doing a second reading.
We're not.
We're just pulling it. Okay.
We're taking no further action.
So no further action. Okay. Thank
Great.
You.
Okay, first item in our agenda is comments from citizens. This time is set aside for citizens to speak to City Council on any issue except any quasi-judicial matter subject to a public hearing. We'd ask that you address Council, first providing your name and address for the record. As well, we'd also appreciate limiting your time to 5 minutes. I do have two signed up this morning, the first of which is Mr. Fred Walzer.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. My name is Fred Walzer, live at P.O. Box 237 Monroe or 692 Park Lane. And I am chair of the U.S. 2 Safety Coalition. I've been before the council several times. I want to update you on what's going on, especially in light of the most recent elections, because we have what amounts to a fairly new legislature, new transportation committees, and as yet some committee members are up in the air. We don't know who's really all the players yet, so it makes it a little bit difficult for those of us that are lobbying the legislature for certain projects, because we got to know who all the players are. Right now, the chair of the Senate Transportation Committee looks like it's going to be a shared role between Republican Curtis King and Democrat Tracy Eide, which means there'll be two chairs of that committee. Formerly it was Senator Mary Margaret Haugen. The chair of the House committee is still Representative Judy Cliburn, but the ranking minority is not known at this point. Since Representative Mike Armstrong, who was a Republican ranking minority, lost his election, he's being replaced by we don't know who yet. But having said that, the delegations from Snohomish County met this morning in a joint meeting, the Snohomish County Committee for Improved Transportation, the Highway 9 Coalition, and the US 2 Coalition. All three of our groups met at a joint single meeting, and we agreed to work as a single unit when we asked the legislature for funding programs and to prioritize programs for funding. And I can tell you that the legislators that we have talked to, and I was down on the 29th talking to as many legislators for the new session as I could, they are trying to come up with funding packages that will fund a lot of transportation needs in the state over the next couple of years, and that has not been settled at all. And basically what we are looking at in this session, because of the McCleary's decision, is basic funding of education is their top priority, and that's going to take up most of the time. They even expect that the legislature will go into probably three special sessions to get this done, which sounds pretty staggering to me. They say, they being the legislators that I've talked to, say that their funding packages probably will be out for the 2014 year. And that has to go for voter approval, and they're looking at all kinds of options. So that brings me around to the Monroe Bypass, which we have been working very hard on. That's a $278 million project. That's going to sit for at least another 2 years. The second thing that the Highway 2 Coalition is working on, and we now have a fairly broad support base, is installation of high-tension cable, center line cable barrier systems from Snohomish to Salton to prevent crossover crashes. And so far I have not received one negative comment about it, and when Senator Haugen was still chairing the Senate Transportation Committee, she was very enthusiastic about it. In talking to other legislators, Senator King from Yakima, who is going to co-chair the Senate Transportation Committee, he's also very interested. The cost on this is much less than a Jersey barrier system, and we believe will be the single most significant safety improvement we can make or have made on US 2. They're also looking at that for other highways. Additionally, there is a system of solar-powered LED lights that we are trying to get installed in the center line of US 2. When I came back from Sweden, I don't know if I've told you this already, but they have it over there, and they have a road similar to US 2 out here. It's two-lane with the centerline cable barrier system installed and these LED solar-powered lights, and at night that highway looked like an airport runway, and that's what we need out here. So those are the two priorities for the US 2 Coalition, and coincidentally they are also priorities for the Snohomish County Committee for Improved Transportation, and we are being supported also by the Highway 9 Coalition. In fact, we're all joining each other. So that's basically an update of what's happening there. Now, for your information, the Snohomish County Cities is meeting in Snohomish on January 17th. We're going to give a presentation there if any of you are representing the city at that meeting. It'll be in Snohomish. And also the end of January is the AWC meeting, and that's a fairly significant meeting, we think, and I will try to provide you with a list of asks that we're going after with the Transportation Committee, and it certainly helps if you do the same ask for us. In other words, we work together on this, and I will try to get you that information and get it to Edie so that she can get it to you folks. The last thing I want to talk about for a minute is the coal trains. And somebody asked me at one of the meetings if I had a map. Well, I've got lots of Washington State transportation maps. And I'm not being facetious, because I outlined the route of the coal trains on this map, which I will leave with you. But the green highlight pretty well shows the Burlington Northern routes coming in from Spokane on this end, going up to Ferndale, and then coming back through Monroe. It's a circular route. And it gives you a pretty good idea of the route these trains are going to take. Today, this issue came up again. It also was brought up when I was down at the legislature. This is a significant issue for us because, as I said earlier, the first initial proposal was 9 trains a day. The second year, it's 18. The third year, it's up to 64. That means that these tracks are going to be plugged. There is a major issue with trains here. When I talked to Senator Haugen on this very issue, she says, while the coal trains are an issue, Fred, she said, what you're failing to recognize is the oil trains that are also traversing this same route, transporting oil to the Ferndale refineries. She says, think of what happens ecologically if an oil train derails somewhere, like going across the Snohomish River or going across the Skagit River and dumps into the river. She says the effects can be devastating, and I never thought of that. I didn't even think about oil trains. She says there's as many oil trains projected to be going to Ferndale as there are coal trains. So tomorrow is a meeting in Seattle at the convention center about this coal train issue, but it will impact us in a significant way because of the return route that I talked about. So if you have any inclination to provide input, I highly recommend it. The Snohomish County Committee on Transportation is going to author a letter of concern about the coal train traffic. And I'll leave this, if you want, here, if that's okay, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, yes.
And that's all I have to report right at the moment. Do you have any questions at all?
Can I just ask, I should have written, I didn't. Can I just ask that you leave those dates again with Edie, so that the dates for the meetings with Edie, so that we can publish them and get them out to all the councils as a reminder?
I'll get them to you.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, next I have Vicki Mullen.
Thanks. Vicki Mullen, 10312 210th Street Southeast, Snohomish, Washington, 98296. And it sounds like I was going to just make reference to a couple of things that were in the packet that was online, and it may not be it was regarding schools, but maybe something you'll want to look at in the future if you're going to be still looking at this in 2013. But you provided with an estimate of new single family and things. Well, this information here is incorrect. It's using 2010 numbers, so this means that the bottom line is wrong. And this was something that was put in as an agenda item as of today, I guess, or well, 12/11, I guess that's today. And then the other thing that you were given was one that showed both 25% and 50%, and you'll see that in your packets the correct number is there, but the incorrect number is used when giving you estimates. So I think it's important that the council is given the correct information in their packets, unless they have time to go ahead and research and see what's going on. It just seems like you can't make good, solid decisions based on erroneous numbers. The other thing would be, if you'll note in your packet, just for future reference, they did note different years, what the different school districts have paid. And if you note, this, oftentimes the Snohomish districts, what they pay and will be paying currently is discussed. If you look at what you were provided, you'll see that when before they passed their bond, their 2008 fee on a single family was $7,000. So really, and that's before. Then, of course, once they did pass their bond and they had more, it comes down. But the Monroe District, as the district has told you, is behind the curve on a lot of things, especially when it comes to growth and comes to new housing that's going to be coming in. The other thing, my question, I have one that I need clarification on, and it's something that's going to be coming before you, I think, tonight in a study session, so I don't know if you take action or not at that time, but I have questions on the public works. It's got a change in your in the page 2-3, it says it changed the EIS impact statement and addendum to EIS statement fees to resolve internal conflict in the Monroe Municipal Code, MMC, Chapter 3.34. I would like to know, and I don't know who would answer that, or maybe you can ask that question during this study session, is to clarify exactly what that means, why it's being changed at this time, because it's been no issue, I believe, in the past. And I would like to know, at first glance at it, I see it as a change in saying that...
Excuse me, Vicki. Yes. Could you... I'm trying to find it.
Oh.
In the packet, so can you direct me to it again?
Well, it was a 2013 fee schedule.
Uh-huh.
And I took it offline. It was a 33 pages.
What was the title? I mean, the section you're talking about. The EIS
study session number.
Oh, this. Oh, I was looking at the agenda packet page, the cover sheet,
and the cover sheet. Here, and I just wanted to find out.
The cover sheet says page 2-3.
And there is no planned action tonight. It is a study session.
And that's why I have questions regarding it.
So pages 2 and 3 of the packet we're looking at. Because I've got 2 of 33 and then 3 of 33, so.
Well,
I just want to make sure I'm looking at the right one.
Okay, well, I was looking at the change on that.
The change is split between pages 2
that's
and pages
what
3. It's important to regard the EIS. And
I just want to make sure
those lines are in your text.
And it says actual cost plus 10% administrative fee, and I believe that's what you've had in the past. And then now it says cost of consultant, if any, plus 10%.
I found it. Thank you.
And I'm just, I'm trying to understand exactly what that means. At first glance, I'm concerned that if any, what's that, what does the if any mean? In the past, EISs have been, it's been my understanding that citizen-initiated rezones have been, the EISs are supposed to be paid for by them. If they're not paid for by the citizen-initiated ones, it's a gifting of public funds and is not legal. So I want to make sure that this is not, I want to see what you're trying to do here. And I would say that I think that citizen-initiated rezones should be paying for their EISs. So that's just my opinion on that. So I'd like further information on that.
Sure.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, I don't have anybody else signed up at this time to speak before council, but if there's anybody in the audience who'd like to do so, please approach the podium, write your name and address for record if you would. Please limit your time to 5 minutes.
Hi, my name is Meredith Meckling, 13624 Chinook Road. And I too, like Vicki Mullen, just kind of wondering what that study session item is pertaining to the EIS. And I would like to, I get concerned when I see that it says the cost of a consultant, if any, because it makes me wonder if there's going to be too much discretion given to a staff member to decide on a case-by-case basis. Whether to charge a fee or not, or whether to get a consultant or not. And I think that when we give too much discretion sometimes that it can open the door to problems. And I just would like to urge you to keep, I know that Title 20 is very clear that the cost of an EIS is to be paid for by the applicant plus a 10% administrative fee. So I would just like to urge caution in changing anything that would make it less clear. I think that staff, you know, would probably appreciate having everything very distinctly laid out so that they don't have to sit and guess and use discretion on their own as to whether to charge a fee. In the case of the East Monroe Development Group, the city went out for an RFP. I think they got 2 responses back, and one of them was as high as $160,000, which the city ended up they decided not to hire the consultants, and for unclear reasons. So that ends up, you know, when the city did that EIS, it ended up as a disaster, basically, because it wasn't done in a way that was acceptable, at least to the hearing examiner. And I would just like to, I don't think it would be appropriate for the citizens and the taxpayers to end up absorbing the cost of an EIS that should be done by the applicant. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else in the audience who'd like to address council at this time? Okay. All right, then. We will move on to the next item, and that is the business and action item, consent agenda. Councilmember Gearing.
Thank you. Motion to approve the consent agenda.
Second.
All right. Motion been made by Councilmember Gearing and seconded by Councilmember Hamford. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, moving on. New business. First item is approval of congestion mitigation air quality grant purchase right of way for shared pedestrian bicycle trail along Chandler Road. And I haven't gotten there yet, but that sounds like a Mr. Feilberg item. So
thank you,
Brad.
As I mentioned last week, we received a grant for $131,000 to purchase right of way for the continuation of the trail along Chandler Road, up to Brown Road. The amount of money we got won't buy all the right-of-way, but it'll buy a portion of it. The there are two things for you to consider tonight. One is that there is a $20,000 match, $20,520 match that we require to pay for that. And also, we've learned that before we can accept the money, the environmental review has to be done. And that will cost us, and we can't use the money to do the environmental review, and that will cost about an additional $9,000 because there's some wetlands that we have to go through in order to put the trail in. So total cost for the city would be $30,000 more or less to get the $131,000. So staff is recommending that you approve that grant, to or approve acceptance of the grant for that right-of-way purchase. And if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Councilor Marquetta.
Thank you. Remind me, it goes up to, did you say last, you told me this a couple weeks ago, Brown Road?
Brown Road is the ultimate, because that's where city limits are.
Okay.
Right now, it just depends on how much, this will probably get us right of way, probably a third of the way up there.
Okay. And where is the $30,000 coming from for the required match?
Streets Fund 105. It would require a budget amendment because it's not in the budget right now because we got awarded after the budget was pretty much done.
And how much is in streets right now? Do you know?
No, but I know we just got several hundred thousand dollars.
Okay. Okay. Thanks, Ben.
Councilor Lee.
Thank you. You said it will allow us to purchase a third of it, roughly?
Roughly, depending on how much it costs to negotiate with people and things like that. So.
Right. So what's the process if we move forward with this tonight? We spend the $30,000, we start negotiating, and we purchase, let's say, the first third. At that point, we still can't do anything with that until when? Like, what's the next step?
We either wait. We continue to apply for grants, both for construction of the trail and for additional right-of-way purchases. So depending on what pot of money becomes available when, we could build the next third or buy more right away.
And was this a single sidewalk, or was this both a sidewalk and a bike path?
This is the multi-purpose trail, the 10 foot wide concrete path trail, or do you want to call it?
Yeah, I think we talked about that.
Yeah, it's
over a year.
Basically matching what exists from Rainier View Road down to where the roundabout's going to go at Chain Lake and Kelsey.
Okay, and do we have an ability to purchase less than 10 feet further up, or is it just that's the way, you know, what happens if we get a third of it purchased at 10 feet and we can't do the rest of it? Do we just build it the first third?
Correct, and then one assumes that eventually this is going to develop up there, and at that time, the right-of-way donations would be, you know, requested of a developer. But this is sort of jump-starting the process to get some additional pedestrian facilities on that road.
Okay, thank you.
Who was your
thanks. Brad, Streets Fund 105. So it's going to require a change because we didn't budget for this. What does it do to that particular fund? Will we not be able to do something else because we're going to potentially pull 30 grand out of there?
Well, I mean, we do have the list of the, I forget how many, 15 different projects, you know, so they're,
right. Well, it just depends.
It'll
always be there, but
always would be there.
That's the same, that's the fund that this, same fund that this would be coming out of.
Right.
Okay.
Great.
In the 2013 budget, the ending fund balance for the 105 fund is $227,000. So it's coming back.
Okay, so it's 20,000, 30, essentially 30,000 out of there.
Correct.
30,000 to get 131,000. So I mean, it's a gift of money. I see your line on that. I'm going to go ahead and move to approve in concept to fund to the funding to purchase the right-of-way along Chandon Road.
Second.
Okay. Motion is to approve the concept of funding. Is that how you worded it?
That's what the recommended action says, so that's how I worded it. Improving concept of funding. Does it need to be more specific?
My bad. Motion to approve in concept of funding to purchase right-of-way along Chandon Road is made by Councilmember Gehring, seconded by Councilmember Tedderwell. Any other discussion or questions, comments, statements? All right, seeing none, all those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Sorry, I pulled up the wrong page. Brad, you're up again.
I'm up again. Okay.
All right, next line item is scheduled date for consideration of hearing examiner's recommendation.
You should all have in front of you the decision slash recommendation from the hearing examiner regarding the cable park at Lake Tahoe. He has found for the city in the appeal of the mitigated determination of significance, he approved the shoreline substantial development permit, and he recommends approval of the shoreline conditional use permit with a couple conditions, the major one being the installation of avian diverters during the off-season. So our code says that we're supposed to present that to you, and you're supposed to set a date to consider it, which we are recommending you do at the next council meeting. So we're requesting a motion to set a date for December 18th, 2012, to consider the recommendation and decision of the hearing examiner.
Councilmember Gehring.
So move.
Second.
All right, motions have been made by Councilmember Gehring, seconded by Councilmember Camp to set the date of December 18, 2012 for consideration of the hearing examiner's recommendation on shoreline conditional use permit, SLCU 2012-01. Councilmember Hamper.
Yes, thank you. Barry, I'm sorry, I didn't understand what you said at the end there. Something about the off-season.
Oh, the avian, one of the conditions is that avian diverters be installed on the cable and guy wires from November 1st to April 1st to help protect birds, keep birds from flying into them.
And refresh me on avian diverters. Are
there's several different types, and they're supposed to do a study to decide which one of the most, the dangerous. If you go to Highway 2, at Bonifoss Road, you have that big orange ball over the highway. That's one type. The other type are little spirals, and they have some little flappy, sparkly things. So it depends on which ones they decide that will work the best.
Okay.
So,
thank you.
Okay. First of all, I think it's exciting news. And I will say I'm very pleased with the hearing examiner's decision, and look forward to bringing this back on the 18th. Okay, so you know other lights. Any other comments? All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right. See this back on the 18th. Okay. We're moving on now. Final action number one, ordinance adopting the 2013 budget. This is the second and final reading. Diane?
No changes from last time.
Councilmember Gehring.
Thanks. First of all, I'd like to say thanks for all the hard work. I think in the last 3 years, the way that the budget process is done, the way that it's presented is just light years ahead of how it used to be done. I just want to say thanks for that. It's just a much more smooth, streamlined process. The information's there. Quite frankly, there's more information available now to not only the council, but to the public via the website. That just, we used to have these giant binders, and it was impossible. If anybody from the community wanted to see it, they would have to get the binder and dig through it, and it's all available online now, and I think that's fantastic. So
I still have the binder.
The binder is a nightmare. It's a waste of paper, I'm not sure everybody lived through it anyway back in the day, but the way that it is now makes it very clear to read. The information is all there, and I just want to say thanks for all the hard work, for everybody who puts that together. All the department heads as well for throwing their stuff in. So with that, I'll move to accept a second and final reading. Ordinance 025/2012, adopting the 2013 budget, including funding of the city clerk position.
Second.
Okay, the motion has been made by Councilmember Gary and seconded by Councilmember Hannaford. For the record, I'll have City Administrator Brazel read the official title of the ordinance.
Ordinance number 025-2012, an ordinance of the City of Monroe, Washington, adopting the budget for the fiscal year ending December 31st, 2013.
Councilmember Hamburg.
Yeah, I just wanted to add to what Councilmember Gary said. We really appreciate all the work from, especially you, on the department heads. And thank you.
Well, Councilmember Gary's experience only goes back 3 years. Mine goes back last 9. And Diane, I too just want to say thank you, and thank you to all of the department heads, directors, managers, for your participation and activity in this process. By far, I believe that this has been the smoothest budget process that I've experienced in as many years as I've been part of aware of the budget process. So thank you, Diane, but thank you also to all of the other directors and managers who provided input and direction for their departments. Any other comments or questions? Okay, all those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Councilmember Hamm. Okay, moving on to final action number 3, approval of Transportation Improvement Board grant for overlay of Freedlands Boulevard. Brett?
Like I mentioned last week, we've received over $300,000 for overlaying Freedlands Boulevard. And as it's a grant, the City Council is required to make formal action to accept that. So we would like you to make a motion to accept that grant for us. And it's already paved, so we don't have to do the environmental stuff like the other ones.
Okay, so your question or recommendation tonight is a motion to approve in concept funding of the repaving of the southbound lanes of Freedlands Boulevard from Tye Street to 152nd Street. Oh, I was hoping for some moved right there. Councilmember Gamble.
So the match on this is $62,118?
Correct.
And that coming from the streets fund?
Yes.
As well.
Motion has been made by Councilmember Kedemath and seconded by Councilmember Gamble. Any other questions for Brad? Okay, all those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, thirdly, interlocal agreement with Snohomish County for furnishing equipment and maintenance repair service. Yes, Chief. Sorry. My computer is going slow today.
Mine too.
I knew it was you, but I want to be sure.
This is a renewal of the agreement that we've had for the last several years. It's a one-year renewal. The only change in the agreement is the hourly rate has gone up $1.03 from $89.92 to $90.95 an hour. The recommended action is for a motion to authorize the mayor to sign the proposed renewal agreement between Snohomish County and the City of Monroe for furnishing equipment, maintenance, and repair service.
Yeah, he was up for some move there too. Any questions for the chief? Councilmember Cutback.
So moved.
There we go. Second.
The motion has been made by Councilmember Cutback and seconded by Councilmember Williams. Mayor to sign proposed renewal agreement between Snohomish County and the City of Monroe for furnishing equipment, maintenance, and repair service. Any Any other questions? Any other comments? All right, seeing no lights, all those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, question to council, would you prefer to get through the or begin discussion on study session topics or go into executive session? Our attorney is here.
She's on the clock.
She's on the clock. That's my right.
She's on the clock.
That's
the executive session.
So he is here? Yeah. Okay. We will be then going into an executive session pertaining to collective bargaining. I don't have the RCWP.
You don't need one for the collective bargaining.
And I'll wait till Ben returns and ask him what time. I'm going to assume that at this point we're going to get 45 minutes to start.
Should there be a motion to extend past 8?
So moved.
Or is it, are you going to reconvene into recess actually, into study session?
Yeah. If it's only going to be 20 minutes.
Yeah. Actually, we're going to recess the meeting now. Now we are reconvening into study session. And so there's no need to extend the
withdrawn
meeting past 8 p.m. because we're now in a study session. How much time would you, do you believe 45 to start?
Probably, yeah.
Okay. All right. So we will be going into executive session for reasons pertaining to collective bargaining. Our attorney is here at this time. And if you have the RCW, yes, please.
I do. Pursuant to RCW 42.30.140. For A.
No action is expected afterwards, Ben?
Correct.
Okay. All right. With that said, then, we will now go into executive session. We are back now in study session, and the first item for discussion this evening under the study session topics is the 2013 fee schedule proposal. And three listed here tonight who, well, Diane's gone, so she's out. So Brad, are you going to lead the
chat? I know what Diane wants to say too. So.
Okay. All right.
I said she can go home and I'd talk for her.
All right. Very good.
Okay, we'll start at the top of the page, which is pages 2 and 3, is the change in the EIS impact statement and addendum to EIS statement fees to resolve the internal conflict between chapter 3.34 of the Monroe Municipal Code and also what it says in chapter 20.04, specifically section 0.250. That section, which is regarding the State Environmental Policy Act, is when a responsible official determines that employees of the city shall prepare an EIS, the city may charge and collect a reasonable fee. MMC 3.34040 states the paraphrase, the cost of planning, engineering, and other professional services when such services are performed by an independent contractor shall be reimbursed by the applicant. And then we wrote the fees resolution says actual cost plus 10% is what the old fees schedule said. Staff has interpreted that to mean that was the amount charged by consultants. The state auditor looked at this in response to a citizen complaint, and he has indicated that the city acted appropriately, but that the regulations are ambiguous and that the council should clarify its intent. So the change in the fees resolution is to clarify at least staff's interpretation of what the intent was there, and the that the charges only apply to outside consultants, direct charges to the city. And of course, the city council, if they wish to have staff costs added, can actually make that their determination, and we'll bring back next week when you adopt that. We'll change the language to reflect that, if that is your intent. The other ones, do you have any questions on that now, or do you just want to keep going?
Let's start with that. Councilmember Williams.
Thank you. What do other cities typically do if somebody, if it's a citizen-initiated EIS?
Better not.
So based on this, it sounds like if the city staff performs an EIS, it doesn't cost the person anything unless, for whatever reason, we need to go outside and hire
somebody else. Correct. That's the way staff has interpreted that part of the fees resolution in conjunction with both 3.34, which says charging for consultant work, and 20.04, which says may charge.
And what is a typical, or is there any such thing as a typical EIS?
No.
So I guess I would be concerned of just knowing how much staff time is considered part of just the process versus, you know, if it takes 3 years of staff time, do we still just consider that just what we do? And probably knowing where that line is drawn would be helpful. It clearly makes total sense to me that if we go outside and have to pay somebody for something, that should be passed on. But it doesn't seem reasonable. You know, and some of these other fees down the line say, you know, $50 per hour with a 1 hour minimum.
Right.
And maybe that's something that we can incorporate with some form of a minimum charge or something like that. So I'd be interested to hear what other people have to say.
Along the same lines that maybe you've already answered it, so there, you don't really know a general idea on what an average review is.
Well, it's not
in
review,
terms of staff.
That's not review. This is creation of.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Right.
And they're very rarely done by staff, so it's not something that there's a large history on.
Okay. Thank you.
So, yield for a question. So, on that point, we typically don't do them ourselves. Is that what you're saying? We almost always go outside for them. What would be an example of one that we would do ourselves, or are there any that we've done in the last year or so?
The two that we did ourselves were the EIS, the phased EIS for East Monroe, and the phased EIS for First Airfield.
And why are those ones we do ourselves versus what would trigger us having to go outside?
Because when we looked at the scope of the EIS and our interpretation of what a phased EIS was at that time, that was something that was easily done by city staff versus doing a final, you know, the end phase of the EIS versus the beginning phase of an EIS, which didn't require any outside consultants to do that.
And neither of those two EISs had proposed projects.
Correct.
Per se.
Right. They were both non-project actions.
Councilmember Hamburg.
You. So I'm trying to understand why. What's the determining factor as to whether we go outside and hire someone else to do it, or whether we decide we're going to. It sounds
if there's staff's ability to do that, there's no one on staff who can delineate a wetland. So if wetland delineation needs to be done, that would have to go out to an outside consultant. Similarly, there's no one on staff who can do hydraulic modeling. So if that had to be done, that would go out to an outside consultant.
Okay, so if we can do it in-house, we traditionally just do it.
I wouldn't say traditionally. I said we have in those two instances done it.
Okay. Two. So we've only done two then this last year.
Right. Except for things for our own projects, which we have also included outside consultants, but Ed Fork with them for things such as comp plan amendments, North Kelsey, things like that.
Okay.
So we have done city-initiated.
City-initiated EISs, yes. Right. We work with the consultants for the specific specialties.
So in these two cases, one, because of not having a specific project. The scope was limited,
correct,
and therefore it was a service to both the I guess locations. Mm-hmm. The project or the EIS, phased EIS, was done in house. Mm-hmm. Just to reiterate, the recommendations here tonight were based on a complaint that was made to the state auditor. The state auditor found that the complaint was insufficient.
He's indicated that, yes.
Okay. However, he does make recommendations to bring our...
That we make it clearer what the intent of the council was, is, will be.
Right. Councilmember Gamble.
Yeah, I mean, my thought is that if we were to pass, we're going to pass on the cost if we were going to contract it out. Mm-hmm. It doesn't make sense to me why we wouldn't. It's still a cost to us, to the city, for you to do it. Why we wouldn't pass that cost or monetize that cost for your time, you know, spent. We've got a lot of different things that we look at that, you know, how much each one of your folks' time is, and with the resource issues that we have, and, you know, all the different things that we're trying to analyze. It just doesn't make sense to me that we wouldn't want to specify that. That if we ever wanted to entertain that, why we wouldn't pass that cost on if Brad was going to do it, or if somebody was going to come and say, staff, my 2 cents.
Councilmember Petterman.
Thank you. I think for, in our precedent, what we've done in the past is, remind me again, it was in there, if it's a consultant paid outside, then we pass that cost if we have to hire a consultant to do it. And then we got a percentage, like an admin fee.
Plus 10% admin fee, correct.
Okay. And was there, if the city staff had to do work themselves versus a consultant, do we charge for that? And previously, I'm trying to look at precedent and where we might want to go. And
yeah, I know the only thing that we really charge for staff time is like when we have a federal grant that we get reimbursed for in-kind staff time. Okay. We do that. I'm unaware of... I can't think of off the top of my head any time we charge for staff time for doing other stuff. It's like, you know, rezones and that kind of stuff are... It's a subdivisions. It's a set fee.
Yeah.
No matter how much time it takes staff. That's how much we charge. Whether it takes, you know, a small amount of time and or a lot of time, the amount that the applicant pays doesn't change.
I think my concern with paying for an EIS in-house is first staff time, and you never know what that's going to shape out to be. I mean, if it's a hearing or anything. I mean, that does add on to the time, even writing the EIS. My second concern is, if we're going to do we do it for everyone? Do we do it for certain projects? I could understand having that as kind of a tool to build development and be customer service friendly, and people want to come here because we provide this service. But there is a cost to it because it is staff time. There's always a cost to staff time. There just is. You're shifting around doing something else versus something else. There's a cost, but is the cost worth what we're getting in return, which might be, you know, more people interested in coming and working here. So I think, you know, that's a factor. I think there has to be some type of, you know, framework of when we charge people for it, because sometimes getting into it, you don't know how big it's going to be. You think it's going to be a small project, and then it turns bigger and turns into more staff time. So, you know, I don't know if it's, you know, well, you know, I'm not sure how you frame that, but I just think we need to be careful about saying that we will write EIS is for citizen-initiated projects and have that kind of as our standard, because that could be all over the board. So is it we write them for, in this instance, all of them if they come here? Or, so, you know, it's my concern is doing it for some and not others. My concern is projects looking like they're, you know, somewhat small but turning into bigger and it turning into more staff time. So those are a couple of my concerns with changing it where we're not recouping a fee.
Councilmember Gary?
Thank you. I think, and appreciate those comments. I think some of that probably requires a crystal ball. We're just not going to know what's coming in. Some of this seems like, I mean, staff has a job to do, and they get paid to do the job, and so some of that is just part of working at a city is you deal with this kind of stuff. So there's a little bit of, I think there needs to be a balance there. Obviously, we need to keep track of that, but I don't know if there's a way to, you know, the project starts off as this and then it becomes this. I mean, that happens to me all the time. You still have to deal with it because it's in process and you have resources, you know, allocated to that, and you do the best you can with those. And I don't know why that wouldn't be any different here, regardless if it was a city or not. It feels like we're kind of meshing into, you know, what is actually staff's job to do, because it is their job to, you know, to deal with stuff like this. So, and perhaps some sort of a happy medium, and I don't know what that is, perhaps what we have suggested here, plus, you know, something else with regard to, you know, mentioning staff, and perhaps we can hammer that if there's a recommendation with regard to that, to at least, perhaps maybe over a certain threshold, maybe then, you know, staff, yeah, something like that, something for happy medium. But part of this is just, I mean, staff job to do it. That's part of the process that we have for X application that comes in. Thank you.
Right.
Just a comment on that is, I guess that's a discussion for another time, because that's actually covered in the Monroe Municipal Code Chapter 20.04.250, which says when the city's responsible official determines the employees of the city shall prepare the EIS, and then the next one is the responsible official may determine that the city will contract directly with a consultant for preparation. So that's kind of in that area, as opposed to what we're talking about tonight is the fees resolution. So I mean, that's something, if you wish, we can bring look at. But, you know, right now we're on
the purpose of this.
We're on the fees resolution.
Kind of mixing.
So,
mixing the two,
you know, do we charge all the time for everything we do, or do we, you know, whether or not we go out or not, I guess, is sort of in a different section. So.
Yield.
Yeah, please go ahead.
I think the issue that we're discussing right around this is, or the difference is, it's, if it's a city-initiated or it's a third party that's initiated. Isn't that real? I mean, that's where my, this is a city-initiated, you know, project, then that was, if you can do it internal, let's do it internal. And that's what we're paying, you know, paid to do. But if it is a third party, you know, coming in, it's not a city-initiated or sponsored, I don't understand why we wouldn't have that. We wouldn't charge for a fee. Maybe I'm looking at this difficult, but, you know, in my former place of employment, we got those all the time, you know, engineering requests because they didn't want a box in the front yard, or it was initiated from a customer or a third party or a different company and say, hey, we want to change your route, your structure. So that engineer would go, all right, here's my fee, cost associated with that, and I'll come up with a solution, right? But if I, who owned the right of way and owned that, said, you know what, I want to change the deployment of that, then I would go to my engineer and they would develop a solution and it was a done deal, no cost. I mean, that's the difference that I see. There's some missing some. Difference between city initiated and what, you know, a third party coming in and saying, you know what, I'd really like you to do this for free.
Okay.
Just a thought. When you're doing comprehensive plan amendments, it gets a little messier sometimes in that if council has three city-initiated docket items and perhaps two citizen-initiated docket items. And part of the comprehensive planning process is to do it concurrently and to do a study of all of it so that the entire impact is analyzed. How do you divide the baby when it comes to, do you have the two citizens do the full analysis for the three city projects? The three city projects pay for, there's going to be overlap is what I'm getting at. And so it gets the reality of the situation a lot of times. If it was just a single citizen-initiated docket request, I think that's
this one.
Simple request,
like
there's simple
like
solution.
The examples that we have.
But I've yet to see a docket cycle where you have just a single project on there when you do the environmental analysis for the entire comprehensive plan update. So going back to what Brett has indicated, sometimes it can get very complicated. Perhaps the code is the better place to start working to address this issue rather than
in the fee resolution. The fee resolution.
Yeah.
That's
what
felt like it was
going to be. Let's see where it is. Thanks, Don. To a comment that Councilmember Cuddeback made, and I think you may kind of address that similarly as well, is giving weight to the decision to prepare the EIS for the airport, for instance. I'm not sure how many hours. Let's just say Brad spent 10 hours on that. And Brad makes $1 million. Whatever it is there. I think there is some value into considering the potential that exists in future tax revenues, in employment, in opportunity. And so from a business perspective, I would probably venture to say that not in every case you charge your customers. That there were probably some customers that you knew that the total revenue potential was worth a $350 removal of a box.
If it only ever costed $300.
Or running a line to it, $1 million opportunity, and the cost was 1% or whatever. I don't know what those determining factors are. I'm saying in business in general, looking at the long-term benefits in comparison to the short-term cost, just as we've had in other discussions, that is something to be considered. And in this particular instance, with regards to the airport, for instance, because it was not a non-project, it appeared to be simple. Nobody complained about it, it went right through, and it's now the accepted whatever plan or whatever it is for the statement. We look at that now as there's opportunity out there. In fact, with that in mind, Jeff, sorry, I'm going to interrupt you. Next week you have some visitors, or this week you have some visitors specific for the airport. And so, which is a good sign. And so,
if you mind the councilman. It's a great point. And yes, and I think the key to that, though, is that I think to your point, Jeff, that maybe it is more looking at the code, is that having a kind of more of a defined structure of process so it doesn't seem or appear to be arbitrary. Because to your point, right, we had a very defined process, and if there was a, hey, this kind of fault, there may be some benefit to this, then there was a, okay, we can appeal or we can go, to a higher authority, manager, whatever, and then there was a vote to say, okay, well, there's a revenue potential or opportunity here. We're going to change this to, basically a company-sponsored, initiative that was brought forward from, customer. So I think maybe that's where we define it. I think right now there's a view that it's a little arbitrary, and I can't say that I don't totally disagree with that perception.
Yeah.
That it could be, you could perceive that.
So the recommendation is tonight is to move towards what is in, or actually next week, but consider what is in here today. To go any further, I guess the question to Brad is to go any further and define, you know, what a cost would be then if we did it in-house. We first need to tackle the policy itself, the ordinance itself.
Right, no, that was attacking the ordinance, Chapter 20, if the council wants to have more structure for the may do it in-house versus may hire a consultant, that's Chapter 20. In this week, next week, for the fees resolution is deciding, you know, there's basically two easy choices, and then the third one's kind of complicated. The easy one is either you say that it's only consultants that we get reimbursed for. Second one is that staff time gets reimbursed also. And then if you want to get more complicated, it's, you know, the first $350 of staff time is not reimbursed, and then after that it's reimbursed. You know, so if things get more complicated. So, you know, the simple one is either make it so that all staff time and consultant costs is reimbursed, or just consultant costs is reimbursed. And then we can get into the, if the council wants more, to give staff more direction on when it's done in-house versus when it's done by a consultant, that's amending Chapter 20 of the municipal code.
Councilor Kennedy.
Thank you. I was just going to follow up with Councilmember Gamble's comment just about having a little bit, making sure we have a process in how we treat these and treating them somewhat equally. Because it is taxpayer and public money we're dealing with. So while we want to be efficient and recruit customers and do all that, I believe that's good business, we also have to look at and respond to taxpayers and residents that, hey, this is our process. We do the same thing, and this is what we do. And we don't charge anyone for an EIS because it promotes business. Or we, you know, charge this or charge that. So I just, you know, I heard your comments about business, and while I agree and the ideal, I think we just have to be aware that this is tax revenue. This is public money. It is not a business. It is government, and there is a certain amount of process that is needed in order for the trust to be there. To comment on that, it almost seems to me that we do need to kind of set the policy or structure before we set the fee, and I might be looking at this backwards. It just seems like we want to set kind of our structure and what policy we want and then set the fee from that. So that's why I was agreeing that maybe looking at the code and then, is this time sensitive that these fees need to be set tonight?
Well, the fees, we have that issue out there of the ambiguity of whether or not we charge, so in case someone shows up tomorrow.
I see.
And changing Chapter 20 is a six-month process.
Okay. So it is time sensitive.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Councilmember Williams.
Thanks. Just based on comments that you made and comments that Jeff made, I feel comfortable moving forward with the language here and the reason why we're changing that. But I would also like to see it on a future agenda that maybe we look at what our policy is surrounding EIS, because it comes up a lot and land use issues are always hot topics and so forth. So I don't think tonight we're going to solve it with, you know, we don't know even what the frame of the argument is at this point. But from what I heard, we're making the change in the verbiage here because of some prompting from an auditor that looked at it, and I understand that makes sense. So I'm comfortable moving forward with this as long as we also add to the future agenda that we look at our policies around EIS and how we set fees for them.
Great. Thank you. And I absolutely agree. Comfortable with moving forward with the language that's here. We're getting in the weeds a little bit, and let's have that other discussion. Let's put it on the future agenda, but no problem with the language that's in here.
Councilor Gale.
I guess the only concern I have, Tom, is in the if any statement. So cost of consultant if any. Because if we're going to, because I think it's great, we have the conversation, we go and we look at the ordinance, put it on a docket, that sort of thing, but
I mean, does it kind of, I guess, I need clarification on it. Because the way I read this, cost of consultant, we're just saying third-party fee. We're basically saying we are not going to charge for your time. So until we address that in policy or procedure, from now until then, we're just basically saying, as a council, that we're not going to charge for anybody that comes along with a third-party and, you know, EIS type of deal.
Which we haven't been doing that before.
That's, I guess, what I'm saying is I have a problem with that. I don't think we should be doing that. So
yeah. I
won't vote if that's the verbiage. If we want it, I won't. I have a fundamental issue. So that's my two cents.
Yeah, my point was I agree that we need to look at both sides of it, but looking at the other policy is going to be a much longer discussion than tonight. So
Well, I guess what I'm saying is then. Is there any way we can get verbiage in there that
staff time?
Yeah, whether it's staff time or applicable staff time. I mean, that even puts a caveat in there that we may deem that we're not, you know, for something that we, you know, that we push for or approved. Once we put something in the policy that, you know, hey, for applicable, something that is associated with that. As far as instead of just a blank check until we redo that.
And make a comment on
that? Yeah, absolutely.
If I was a customer walking in and was told that I'm going to pay for staff time, and I think it's going to be 3 hours, and then I come back and find out it was 40 hours, I'm going to be a little bit upset.
But that's no different than a consultant giving an, you know, an estimate on a job or a contractor. I mean, that's on any type of service in that regard. Engineering quote, car. This is my estimate.
Yeah, my point is I don't know enough about the process to know if it's easy for us when someone walks in the door to give them an accurate estimate of an EIS statement. Where if we're going outside to a third party and doing a wetland mitigation, you know, that's something they'll come out and do, you know, do their budget on. I don't know enough about it to make that decision, is all I'm saying.
Yeah, and I guess all I'm saying is that we've had two, right? So it's not like we're impacting a huge base of customers in regards to this. If we put the verbiage in there so we don't just leave it open to whatever. That's all I'm saying. But you might too soon.
And with that in mind, we've had two. Both were treated equally. One was fought, one was not. Why? That's for you to decide. This isn't the only service that we provide in the city of Monroe that we don't charge for. City Administrator Bradley.
We have applicants come through the door on a daily basis, and this gets to what Councilmember Gearing was talking about, this service that we provide as a planning department. We help the applicant get through the application, whether it's a building permit or a land application. We also have pre-development meetings where all staff is sitting in this room going over a project, helping the applicant to know what to expect. We don't charge for that. I mean, there's staff time. There's at least a couple hours at the meeting, couple hours to prepare. So this is a part of a bigger discussion. So I would propose to staff go back between now and next week, and or maybe further out, and look what other cities are doing, because we don't know. We haven't looked at it. The language here tonight brings us into consistency with what the auditor suggested we do.
Indeed.
That's what you have before you.
That's where we can.
Thank you. I really appreciate your idea, Gene. I was just going to suggest that since we're only dealt with two issues concerning this, if we remove the words "if any" until we get the code revised, then we're saying that we will go with the majority of events, which is cost of consultant plus 10%. And then when the code is reviewed, we could address whether or not or how we handle the non-consultant involved EIS. That's my suggestion.
Of 33.
Yeah, no. Page 5, please.
Page 5. That's helpful.
Okay, page 5. And page 5 just basically removes some references that aren't really needs. So we took them out, say paper. Same, 6, the mechanical permits and the plumbing permits refer to a table that was on a page that wasn't on that page, because it probably years ago it was on that page, and as the fees resolution changed, it moved, but no one ever got that, so we're going to fix that one. And then page 7 is the clarification that there's a minimum charge of $50. I think that's what it is. And then if it takes more than an hour, it's hourly after that. And then also the city's starting a new plan review service of a basic plan. So if someone comes in with a subdivision and has five different building, 100 houses, and there's five different house types, they don't have to pay the entire fee every time they submit the plan for that same house that we've already reviewed 20 times before. So you'll be hearing more about that as we establish that program, but we thought we'd get that in the fees resolution. Any questions about those? Ben, jump to finance. I'll say that real quick, and then police, or you want to do the police first?
You're leading.
Okay. So as we talked about in the budget discussion, we're sewer rates increased by 14%, which we passed a resolution last year to say that, to pay back the bonds. And then the 5.6% increase in water is to cover the extra cost by the 7%, I think it was, rate increase that the city of Everett is imposing upon us.
What page are we?
Page 19.
Real quick, Councilmember Hampton.
Yeah, I just wanted to thank you for putting out that brochure listing all the reasons why the increase as was requested. Thank you very much.
Brent?
Right. Right. That's it for me.
Councilmember Gaines?
Thank you. I'd like to go back to page 2 for a different topic, but I'm back to page 2. I'm going to get back up there myself here. I know I'm kidding. Appeals. I'm noticing, so I'm looking at appeal to director, appeal to hearing examiner, appeal to city council. There's a difference in fee between an applicant and non-applicant. Just wondering about that. I would think that the staff time, the cost of a hearing examiner, cost of whatever would be the same regardless of who the person is. I'm just curious as to why those are different, and I would propose perhaps they might need to be the same. Just maybe some historical background on why they're different. I don't remember that myself, but I certainly think it's would be fair to have those fees be the same.
You want my recollection?
Please.
I haven't researched this, so I don't have the actual minutes and things, but it's my recollection that they were substantially higher before, and in order to encourage the participation of the public in the decision process, they dropped the non-applicant permit fees. Because I think it used to be somewhere around $1,500 for both of them. And that
that's a little steep.
Yeah. And so they dropped it down to encourage participation.
I would contend that I think that the fees listed are not exorbitant, and this cost to the city can staff and is the same regardless of who it is doing it. But I prefer to see those. I think it's quite frankly it's more fair to see those be the same regardless of who is doing those. Yeah, right. Throw that out there. Thanks.
So you're saying a single fee, for instance, appeal to a director rather than an applicant, non-applicant.
Why the delineation? Yeah, it's the same cost to everyone, regardless of who it is. It costs the city the same amount, it costs the staff the same amount of time, it costs the same amount of rate for a hearing examiner. Why isn't the fee the same? And again, it's not $1,500. I agree. If it was $1,500, we'd be dropping it, you know, tonight too. That's way too high for either person, but these aren't unfair as they are, and I think we're probably taking a loss. You know, I think it's not out of the question to charge the same for both, regardless of who it is.
Administrator Brown.
I would again agree with Councilmember Gearing that if we're going to look at fees, this is definitely one that we should look at as well. We just talked about the staff time for EIS. The staff time for the appeals is equal to that work, if not more. So I would recommend we look at other cities as well and see what they're charging, because I guarantee you $150 isn't enough to even walk out of the office to get
it. No, it doesn't cover the hearing examiner. Yeah, exactly.
So, anyway, that's my opinion, and I would recommend that we look at that as well.
Bring back some information for next week.
Thank you.
For next time.
Chief?
Last but not least, we would like to add lamination services.
Okay.
Citizens for who have requested concealed pistol permits suitable for framing, disregard suitable for framing. But a couple of the other cities have this service for individuals who have concealed weapons permits, and we thought we'd offer it. It's like $3.50. So,
do you think Tim Iman's going to come?
Pardon me?
You're going to beat down the doors on this one, and it's all about revenue. $375 for elimination.
Is it $375? I thought it was
$350.
You put $375.
It says $375. Oh, right. I'm just a bad extra quarter,
Chief. We've been charging about this for a long time. Could be a
newspaper on that. Yeah. There's no requirement that they have to have it. They can have it if they want. It's a service that they would.
That's great.
Yeah, I like
it.
I'd love to
see Mr. Ryan back for Gamble. And you be at nine. You're going to be at nine. Are we at Reno? No, you're at nine. So I just had a question. Are we we're good with the school mitigation fees being the right amount?
I think we did. We table that discussion.
No. I'm talking just in the fees. No.
I thought we took that off for the beginning.
No.
What page are you on? I'm sorry, Councilman.
Well, I'm just looking at the.
Let's see.
3 and 4.
Thank you.
Sure.
No, sorry. The school board member does.
The school board. School.
I just want in light of the.
Thank you.
All right. The last year in here.
Yeah.
Adoption.
Yeah.
We're up to date. We got two.
The last wood adoption.
Huh? We said
in light of the last adoption?
We didn't adopt.
We didn't adopt the correct ones. I'm just. Check. We didn't have the right fee structure in place and we had to refund. I'm just.
Right. That's where those came from.
Okay, so
those are wrong.
So this is
the correct ones.
All right, I just want gotcha.
Sounds cool. I don't think so.
We'll double check. We'll bring it back. And then on the cover sheet. The service delay in order for fees to be effective January 1st, 2011, adoption of the fees resolution must occur in December 2010.
It's been corrected.
Okay, that has been corrected.
Yeah, I saw that.
Okay. Cool.
Okay.
All right. A few things to move forward on and get some more information, bring back to council. Expect to have it back next week, but possibly the first part of December, depending on where we at.
This is 2 weeks.
I've been stuck in a room for a week and a half now. No sense of time. First part of January. If we have to bring it back in January, we are. I mean, it's not the preferred, but we're still okay. There's no RCW or anything like that that is stating.
No, we just lose expected revenue for the water and sewer.
Yeah. We need to get it done.
All right, we'll all right. Okay. We'll have it there. Ready to move on? Department reports. Been anything further? Jeff? Chief, anything further? Brad, anything? Anything further there, Mr.?
Are you going to talk about the surgeon? Okay.
Yeah. Do you have anything in it?
No, I was just going
to... Oh, you're going to... Okay, all right. I'll bring you. Yeah, no, I'll start.
Go first.
I'll go first. Yeah. Okay, so Councilmember Cutaback received some input from a member of the community with regards to a project or with regards to some work that had been done at a location here in town. And do we have to say the name of it? We don't have to. We can't. It doesn't matter. And I appreciate her bringing that to Administrator Brazel. Because the one thing that I want to assure and hit head on so that Councilmember Cutback can go back to the individual and assure them is that no preferential treatment has been given to this particular property owner or business owner. Let me start out by saying that before I ran for mayor, I was very close to a business that was opening in Monroe, and the one or two days before planned opening, the business was red tagged for an item that, after the fact, we found out that it was not an essential item. It was something that needed to be corrected, but the business could have opened and the correction made within a certain timeline. As a result of the red tag, the business lost thousands of dollars in pre-set business plan. Scheduled business, lost thousands of dollars, and it took 3 weeks for them to fix the problem and receive their final permit. The point of that story was that looking back at that process, they did not have to red tag. They could have worked through the process. And so part of what we've established or what we've done here at City Hall is we've taken a very consultative approach to resolving issues. Natural Factors has had some issues that we've worked through in their TI project. Rhino...
Manufacturing.
Rhino is
manufacturing.
Yeah, manufacturing. They had some issues. We were able to resolve them without shutting them down. The UPS store had an issue with a sign. We were able to work through that, and we're continuing to work through some processes. All in all, there are literally dozens of instances where something is not meeting code or so forth, but we're working through the process and not shutting the business down while that's happened. The case that we have here, we believe that they're non-compliant or have gone outside of one of the code. But they would argue just the opposite. And our own maps, for instance, say that these are just estimates. They're not, but I can't remember, I can't even read it, it's so small. So the long and short of it is that we have been in contact with business. We've been in contact with business lawyers, so on and so forth. Where we were heading as a administration with regards to this particular business is, quite frankly, I want to keep it out of the courts. And we could shut them down, but I guarantee you that's where we're going to be, is in the court system. And why do that? Why stop a business when the impact is not something that is a danger to the community, so on and so forth? And that's our attorney's opinion. And so I just wanted to share that there's no preferential treatment. We are working through the process. Just to be sure, I checked with the city attorney to be sure that this was not something that we needed to bring to council. And he
he responded in an email message, and I just wanted to read that for you. This email follows your message below and our telephone discussions today regarding the shoreline matter. As I understand the situation, your characterization below is accurate. The issue is presently under staff and legal review as a potential code violation. The landowner has raised several complex legal assertions that are being analyzed. Depending upon the city's ultimate conclusions, this matter may result in the issuance of development permits to the landowner, formal enforcement action, or execution of voluntary compliance agreement, among other potential outcomes. As you correctly noted below, this is purely administrative issue and is not a policy legislative matter warranting or otherwise appropriate for formal council involvement at this time. So, just want folks to know that that appreciate the bringing up. We want to address it head on and reassure that we are doing for this business what we have done for many others.
I can add to that by letting council know that the red tag thing, that was something we did in the past, and it was pretty knee-jerk. You know, somebody's doing something without a permit, boom, red tag them. Horrible culture, doesn't set a good feeling in the customer's mouth, and it sets bad examples for people wanting to come to Monroe. So our process now is pretty simple. If the building official sees something out there, he reports it to his supervisor, and then discussion happens prior to red tagging anybody. That, unless it's an immediate life safety issue or, you know, somebody's in danger, then obviously it would go up. But nowadays, there's a conversation with their supervisor. It may even elevate to the department director, figure out how to approach it, and then go back out to the customer. So anyway, that's how we operate nowadays.
Councilor, here.
Great, thanks. I just want to say thanks for handling that. I appreciate the culture here now. Over the last few years, there's been definite change that's been positive, and being able to work with people, I think that's just key rather than just shutting them down. So again, this is like any kind of a council area at all, not for something for us to get in the weeds in. I do appreciate getting updated on it, and you guys have done that in the past, so I say thanks for that as well. And any other further updates would probably be helpful as well. Working with folks rather than shutting them down, I think that's fantastic. Bodes well long term for creating the positive image that we're looking for here. So, thank you.
All right. All right, interested in agenda?
Absolutely, but I am going to beat that topic up because I'm so proud of our staff and the job that they've done. I know that I gave Robert a report earlier today about the great job staff is doing planning and stuff like that. The accolades keep coming in from citizens, and I actually got a phone call from Chicago Title out of Linwood today, and a big developer from Monroe was in there doing paperwork and the like, and they were talking about Monroe and the permitting process and how excellent our staff is to work with and how easy it is to get applications through and permits here. So at any rate, what we've done is working. It's out there. It's out as far as Linwood, which is exciting news for all of us. And, of course, I continue to let staff know what a great job they're doing. So, anyway.
Okay, I'm going to toot a horn here. I'm sorry. D. Jason Nordstrom from Nordstrom Engineer Inc. sent an email. I just wanted to, in response to a question as to was his were his needs taken care of? And his response was, yes, sir, they did. And everyone was great, all capitalized, as always. And that's your great staff.
Cool. Okay, draft agenda, December 18th, 2012. Under announcement of presentations, confirm mayor's appointments to the planning commission. We have a consent agenda. Under new business, we have 2013 lodging tax fund recommendations.
Cool. Hold that thought. I just want to, does council know that Mr. Luth had stepped down? Okay, just wanted to make sure.
Number two on new business, ordinance approving change of banking services to KeyBank, first reading. Final action, consideration of hearing examiner's recommendation for the Cable Park Shoreland conditional use permit. On the draft agenda for January 8th, 2012.
Council, anything from you?
Not tonight.
All right. Meeting is adjourned.